Yeah, we do.
It's easier to follow.
We're both the same size. So.
Very good. So let's begin with the bow. Good evening, everyone. Just for the recording, I'll just mention what we did during the meditation. Today, we're working with mindfulness of sense perceptions, and we listen to sounds in the environment. So we had some help from the building people here making sounds, as well as Michael. So I thought I would just start with give a little bit of an overview, and then we'll go into more detail what this is about. So again, we're working with the fourth foundation of mindfulness tonight, which is the mindfulness of sense perceptions. And it's really about how we experience the world through our senses. It's also called the mindfulness of phenomena, which gives you some sense about this moving from a tighter view of mindfulness into something that's more a panoramic awareness. So there's a sense of this is still a mindfulness practice, but within that you're moving more into a more spacious realm. So that probably makes sense based on listening to sound, and we'll talk more about the sound experience. So for this practice, the phenomenal world becomes the object of meditation. And where we might have first felt that sound was an irritation, then we might, from this experience, have shifted somewhat into some curiosity about the world around us. So meditation and mindfulness isn't something where we have to really shut out the world and separate ourselves from the world. But this particular practice, mindfulness of the sense perceptions, actually makes the world come alive, because we're contacting the world in a very direct way. So I wanted to read something that I think is really very profound, that comes from the Dzogchen Ponlop Rinpoche. And this was from what's called Bodhi Magazine, way back in 1993, number 3 in the winter. And this is on a whole article on the four foundations of mindfulness. So this is the fourth foundation, mindfulness of phenomena. That's what he calls it. The fourth mindfulness is called the mindfulness of phenomena, or mindfulness of dharmas. After working with the development of the mindfulness of mind, this mindfulness brings us to the next stage, which is the experience of panoramic awareness of the phenomenal world. The phenomenal world is not only within our thoughts, within our mind. The phenomenal world is also the object of our mind. The world that is experienced around us with body, speech, and mind. Having a sense of relating with these surrounding phenomena in a mindful way is what we call the mindfulness of phenomena. That mindfulness is basically the recognition of the interdependent relationship of our mind and the phenomenal world. It is working with the relationship of each individual phenomenon existing around us as the object of our experience. In order to understand that particular phenomenon and relate with it properly, we must develop the mindfulness of phenomena. And that, in some sense, is not really separated from awareness. This mindfulness is very much related to the notion of awareness, of having a 360-degree awareness of the phenomenal world existing around us. When we can relate that kind of panoramic awareness with the simple present nature of phenomena, that is what we call the mindfulness of phenomena. It is simply having the prajna, which means insight, to relate with the phenomenal world outside more directly, more precisely without any fear and without any conceptions. Without any philosophical conceptions, we simply relate to the most fundamental state of phenomena. So from that, we can see that we're moving into slightly different territory here. We've been working with the mindfulness of body, very grounded, the mindfulness of feelings, the mindfulness of mind. So those are very much, you could say, within our kind of close world. And now the mindfulness of sense perceptions actually is making direct contact with the physical world through our five senses. So through sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. So those are our senses, and that's the way we make contact with the world. So in reviewing the chapter for today, chapter 10, this chapter is called Opening the Doors of Perception, Mindfulness of the Sense Fields. Galen Ferguson, I think, makes two main points, and I think these are the two ways that I think about the importance of working with the sense perceptions. So the first point he talks about is the middle way. And the middle way is, if you think of the Buddha's life story, he grew up in a palace, and he was his life was one of indulgence and kind of exuberance into the sense perceptions, over the top. And then he moved out of that situation and into an asceticism. That became his practice, giving up food, giving up everything, basically living in a cave. And you may have seen pictures of the Buddha where it just shows this statue of an emaciated person with just ribs. I mean, you probably see some of those, and it's quite horrific, actually. But it's said that that was actually one practice people did at that time, basically to starve themselves. And he came to realize that neither path of indulgence or complete denial was actually a very good way to proceed on the path, because without a body, it's very hard to attain enlightenment. So what he found was the middle way of working with the senses. So not indulging and not rejecting, which is then not avoiding or not repressing. Not avoiding or repressing. So this practice of working with the senses is one where we can notice where we want to draw things toward us or push them away. So there's a sense of attachment in drawing toward. And we can think of that, you know, food seems to come to come to mind easily. I'm sure we all have something we can think about on that realm. You brought something? Oh, okay. Because I thought you might bring something, but that's fine. We have plenty. All right. So we can think about often working with sense pleasures or things we don't like as grasping or pushing away. And the issue there is kind of wandering in hope, which is getting more, drawing in, or fear, which is when there's prohibition, or you could say, taking the opposite approach of overindulging, I'm not going to have any. So denial or pushing away. So that's the other side, hope and fear. So when we're caught in that, we're caught in like and dislike, wanting and denial. So that, to me, is the first point, is that in working with the sense perceptions, the approach is to find the middle way so that there's some sense of liberation from either being overly attached or from rejecting totally. And the second point that seemed very important in that chapter was that the essence of mindfulness is nowness. So when we pay attention to the senses, it's taking place in the moment. It's never, it's always in the moment. And we find that if we're not in the moment, then we have lost the connection with that direct perception of the object. Does that make sense? So this is very powerful practice, and it's similar to the experience of noticing when you're thinking and coming back to the breath. So it's very similar in that way, because when you come back to the breath, you're coming back excuse me, you're coming back to nowness every time you do that.
This is making me think a little bit of an Ursula Le Guin short story. I think it was when Adam and Eve, and Eve was going around unnaming everything in the garden, because she said that once it had a name, you stopped seeing it. That's mm-hmm. for what it was.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why the labeling, that's why being able to realize as soon as we label something, we've layered our concepts on it and no longer really see what's there. That's exactly. That's
the other one that I heard about was that they say kids, you know, pictures that have hidden things in it and what's different.
Oh, yes, yes.
They said little kids are much better at it than adults because they don't know what's supposed to be there.
Uh-huh. So they're more open and curious and just see what's there.
As opposed to what they think is
yeah.
there.
Well, that's a great example, because actually in Tibetan Buddhism they talk about developing the experience like being a child in the shrine room. So Tibetan shrine rooms are full of color and gold, and it's very elaborate. There's just a lot of very interesting objects and things that sparkle and glow, and they talk about it's like being a child in a shrine room. So that sense of being open to your perceptions, and when you think of a child, they don't know what they're looking at, or a newborn baby, you know, like what are they actually experiencing? They certainly don't have words for those things, and they don't then therefore have labels. So with this experience of working with the sense perceptions will actually connect us directly with nowness, and we can see when we immediately go to a label. So that's the other side of it. So we're working with this point at which our eyes connect directly, our ears connect directly, and so on to the object. And within that, there's a potential to actually be in the moment of nowness. So it's another way. And that's why it's one of the four foundations of mindfulness, because you have to have that awareness of the moment without laying another story on it. So I wonder if you remember, I think it was last week we had a discussion of motorcycles, I think. I don't think you were here. So that was perfect, actually, for this week, because it's sort of like when you hear the motorcycle, I mean, if you're not in sort of the environment where we're saying, okay, listen to every sound without attachment or rejection, just be with it. What happened last week is we were talking about the motorcycles, and you could, I mean, I always feel right away there's an irritation when I hear the noise. And people were saying, well, the noise is important because this is what keeps them alive on the motorcycle. And we were commenting how irritating that was. So So this is what we're talking about here is the experience before the concept takes hold, and how the concept actually narrows down the experience. And when that happens, what's going on is we're keeping our experience in the realm of the familiar, because we are already labeling it with what we know, and therefore we aren't open to what might be there. We aren't open to actually see something different or experience something different. And you realize when you start thinking like this how much we kind of narrow down our world in a way, because we are comfortable with our concepts and our world is built around that. What takes us out of that is this willingness to actually be more present in the moment with all of our sense perceptions and with the experience of what that might be, whether or not it's pleasurable or painful, whether or not we think we like it or we don't like it. Either way, there's an opportunity to actually contact directly this experience. And there's a moment where we could actually wake up from that direct concept. I think I'll just stop there. I'm curious. I'd like to just first talk about what the experience of this working with sound was for people and what you might have noticed during that. I think it was very interesting because before I even brought it up, there was something going on out here, and then the sawing and the drilling, and it was perfect, actually, to have stuff going on in the environment. And then Michael provided some other entertainments for us. maybe you have something you can think of that you want to share about what that felt like to you, whether...
It was interesting that it felt like there, when I paid attention, there was very little quiet time.
Yeah.
And I thought, normally I sit here and I don't think it's so loud here. I mean, clearly the guy's clanking out there when he started working. I thought that's excessive noise. But I was like, boy, there's a lot of noise here. But I didn't think like there's never any cars or planes going.
Right.
Really, and the other thing I really noticed is that one of the sounds, the sound of the flute, which I don't know if Michael can play the flute better, but it was the most melodious tune he played for us. And I was like, ooh.
Yes.
And then I felt myself sitting there going, oh, I might do that again. And I had that sense of, like, I wasn't here now, I was here in this fear of the thing I didn't like coming back.
Yeah.
And I was just very aware of that. And then the other sounds, I was like, I realized I was almost not listening as much as, like, judging. Like, he's going to do, is the next sound going to be like that? And I couldn't just, it was hard to just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had that sort of,
right.
And it's, I feel like of the senses, sound is one that's really hard to block.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there's an irritating noise of whatever kind, like irritating friction in your head.
Yeah.
Smell, you walk out of the room.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I know we weren't supposed to be judging, but I was aware. I was not hearing, what I'm hearing now is sort of the peepers, but I was aware of how much transportation noise there just really is around here.
Yeah.
And in a way,
when we were meditating, the first part, I thought that I noticed how much road sounds like ocean.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a normal drive.
Coming.
Yeah, this is the sound of it's arising, it's dwelling, it's ceasing, and then there's another one. Yeah. Suzanne?
And people makes a different noise. It's not, the ocean sound is more kind of constant.
Did you have anything?
I just felt exactly the way you did. I think a lot of time I spend trying to block sound out in a normal day-to-day thing, like when I'm sitting in my living room, I have the flight pattern over my house. So I spend a lot of time trying to block it out, but when I sat here and listened, it was like I became very conscious of it. The flute scared me to death, and I startled. And then I was like her, I was like, oh God, is he going to do that again?
I actually thought the flute sounded kind of nice. It had a sort of a woodsy wooden sound. I don't know if it's a wooden flute, but it sounded like it's made of wood. And that's the image that came to mind.
It's a plastic soprano recorder.
Okay.
I'm expecting to get the cars, the planes, the bicycles, and kids, but I wasn't expecting the flute. That startled me.
There was a surprise element in that. Well, the irritating one you did wasn't a surprise. You already had said
right,
that
it might
be some things that were irritating.
On the paper was a surprise. You crumpled the paper, right?
No.
Uh-huh.
See, no one knows what they sound like.
It sounded like some paper.
It did sound like that.
There were three sounds. One was the soprano recorder, okay? And yes, I can play melody on it if I want to.
In fact, he was going to play a tune, and I said, no.
So
I don't like that.
Too nice.
But I'm not very accomplished at it. The first one was just some capsules in a... like a plastic pharmaceutical thing being rattled. And the third one was a ratchet socket wrench.
Oh, and that's
that was the
irritation.
Yeah, almost sounded like that. But look at how we're labeling. You know, like, isn't that the first thing? Like, what is it? That's. I was amazed. Like, even though I knew what he was going to do, I was confused. I didn't, you know, the rattling the pill thing, I thought that sounded like paper, too.
Yeah,
and it was a different sound. And again, ooh. Our senses are shocked.
We're super
This whole world is talking to us.
I'm seeing things more clearly.
I know.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Well,
they're
doing
the
work.
I had, it was one time I was meditating at home and my husband was up and he was doing something and I thought it was just going to like, you know, like people making noise because it like went on and on and on and I just sat and I was like, okay. And I finally got up and said, what were you doing? Well, he's putting all his pills out for the week.
Oh,
it was much worse than just
that.
Right. Okay. I lived in Coolidge Corner. I was on a sort of a side place, and it's the quietest place I ever lived. So because it was a little courtyard kind of thing, so there was no natural noise, and it was sheltered enough from the street noise. So somebody across the complex could be using a keyboard. A typewriter, and you'd hear it really loudly, and that was very strange because I realized that country. If you're ever out in the country, there's a lot of noise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mary, did you have any?
Yeah. I kind of, when I went off and got a little distracted, what came up for me was that I went, God, I'm so happy that I can hear things.
Ooh.
So I kind of went this way, and then I had to bring myself back, but I'm so happy I can hear things because I love music, I love hearing people talk, and it was an appreciation, but I found myself having to kind of wind back to just kind of being in the center of it. But it kind of went there.
Oh, interesting.
The other thing I thought about with the not liking the noise and sort of what that was about, and I thought about that thing that Adam Tupton said about last week about making friends with your fear, because I thought, well, you know, like in earlier times. Like, it was important to be able to hear what was happening because certain sounds would mean, you know, what kind of creature was coming, or other people who weren't your friends were coming. And that you had, so it kind of took me to that. Like, it's not terrible that I got upset and worried about the noise.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're supposed, you know, you're supposed to when you're worried about noise.
Like the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
Those are alerts.
Yes.
What outside of that came up for me was when you think about, like, there's like, if there's like a low level hum or something, say it's an air conditioning unit or something, and then all of a sudden it goes off, and all of a sudden I notice my body will just relax. It's like I've been, and then when it goes off, you notice the difference in your vibration when that kind of white noise is away.
But have you ever been woken up by a sudden silence?
No.
No, it just looked like when those sounds...
When they're not there,
when they're
the
not
background
there.
Noise.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that that's true for the perception of sound, that when it stops, you notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And for the perception of smell, it is actually impossible to notice when it stops.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's persistent, more persistent.
You cannot do it. You cannot recall a smell going away. You might notice after a while that you no longer smell it,
but not like that.
You cannot notice the cessation of a smell.
Yeah.
That's because of habituation.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it's physiologically built into us.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, sorry.
Physiologically, you know, your receptors are getting used to it. And their response is lesser and lesser with time.
Uh-huh.
But with sound, you do notice the cessation.
Yeah. No, this is with the smell.
But wouldn't
you get used to the smell because your receptors no longer respond to it?
Wouldn't the smell also just sort of have the molecules or something in the air for a longer time where sound is more finite?
Yeah.
Maybe.
It seems like.
So they'd be dwindling. Like if you took the smell out, if somebody comes into the room wearing a ton of perfume, and that lingers.
Yeah, if it's a ton, it'll take a long time for it to go away.
Yeah. I'm showing my bias.
But I can smell these smells, so we're going to move on. Did you have anything in terms of the sound?
I had said to Michael it was entertaining. I'm reminded of John Cage, the composer who encouraged you to listen to ambient sound. And he said once that sometimes he'd turn the radio to the in-between stations and just listen to that. So then I thought, well, we're not supposed to be entertaining ourselves. But I loved the sound earlier of the glass and the tin cans that people were going through, and I didn't want that to stop. I really liked it. I don't know if anybody heard it, but it was before you
said
to go into.
Was that what that was?
I think it was the guy bringing. They come and clean, so I thought maybe he was bringing it back and clean with attachments.
Well, I'm not sure if he was.
It sounded like glass and tin cans. It didn't matter what it was.
Right,
I heard that.
Yeah.
It sounded really nice. And also, having had brain scans a lot, the first thing I did was, you know, listen to the sounds of the MRI machine and just count out rhythms or just be interested in it. And so I've kind of learned how to just take in sound and listen to it. But I do think it's entertaining, so there's, not doing it right.
Well, the exercise, it's really about, it's, when we are really working with mindfulness practice, I mean, we can be entertained doing anything, right? We can be entertained sitting on the meditation cushion following our story.
Right.
So this is similar in that we're not trying to be entertained, we're trying to actually be, to wake up in the experience because there's a direct, we're directly contacting that experience and we're also then noticing whether we're laying labels on it or whatever. So, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if you're saying you see it, you're experiencing it as entertainment, but then you could actually, you know, turn the dial a little and see where else you go.
Is there anything so wrong with experiencing it as a tutor?
Right. Is there?
That
story about the famous one about John Cage is a concert where it was a piano concert. There was people who bought tickets and they came, and there was a pianist and a piece of music set out for him, and it lasted several minutes and was all rest.
That's 27.
Yeah. And then people
27 cents.
So people got pretty mad at that, and John Cage said, well, there was a lot happening. There was, you know, there was traffic in the street and so on. It was just like this experiment.
Is this tool the same as when you're dealing with your emotions, like where you say, you know, touch your emotion and, you know, sit with it? It's the same kind of thing. You're hearing something, mm-hmm. and then you're sitting with it. You're not labeling it. So is it similar in that kind of concept?
You're touching it, but you're not. But see if you can just experience it rather than going off into something.
So the label thing, you're avoiding the verb.
Right,
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The use of labeling, I don't know, but it bothers me a little bit, because the question is not whether we know what it is or something. The issue is it the occasion for our having a reaction which sends us off to the next one and the next one and the next one? Mm-hmm. Or can we just comfortably be mindful, let it go away?
Well, the labeling is noted. Is we're not trying to label it. That's mm-hmm. the point.
Yeah.
It's we're going beyond concept if we can. I noticed, you know, after I gave my little, this is what we're going to do with sound speech, all I could do was label everything. It was like a suggestion not to do it, and then I was doing it every time. The minute I heard something, airplane, everything was labeled, and I could not label.
Mm-hmm.
But I've certainly had an experience where I've led this exercise and there was a sound that I didn't, I actually went beyond the label. I didn't let the label drop in so that it was a direct experience. And believe me, it feels different when you do that. And that's the point, you know, also of this exercise. And also, to, as Michael said, to go beyond this like and dislike. So ultimately, meditation is about being able to be in our world open, with an open view, and open to perception and open to what comes to us without shutting down, that always shutting down. So I thought I would read Opening the Doors of Perception is the title of this chapter, and this comes from William Blake's poem, The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. If the doors, and this is what is in that poem, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, comma, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. I'll read it again. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. And, of course, Aldous Huxley took that title in 1954 and wrote a book called The Doors of Perception. And that was about his experience on mescaline and how he opened to his world in a different way. So,
then there was the acid rock group.
And right, the Doors of Perception,
same,
right.
The Doors, yeah.
The Doors, the same idea. So we're not going there particularly, but... So any other comments before we move on? We're going to move into some of our other sense fields here.
I just wondered, when I got startled, all it was like, I was just sitting there waiting for the next shoe to drop, and it was like, it was hard for me to go back and just try to hear the sounds. It was like I was really wound up with the
you know, how do you get anticipation. Yourself back from the fear part of it? The emotions took over.
That's interesting, and you noticed it, because often that will be happening and we never notice it, but we have a reaction that we're not that aware of. So again, you're noticing it, and if you're able to let it go and just come back to you can come back to your body, you can come back to being in the room and just being present. But you noticed. I mean, it's not one way or another, you know. So you're noticing that the fear came up and then anticipating the next moment what it might be. And you can see how that distracts you from being present, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Takes you away from being present in the moment. So, okay. So Gary brought in some objects for us.
Some of them are very obvious, others are not obvious.
We'll start with that. Do you want to talk? Maybe you want to say something about your experience of cooking, because the way you describe it is so vivid to me.
Well, cooking is one of the few when I cook, I like to do. It's one of the few activities that appeals to every single sense: smell, taste, touch, sight, hearing. Every single one of your senses are engaged in cooking. And, this is
Maybe you'll figure it out.
this is a experience for the nose. I'll pass it around.
Should they each take one? Or do you just, what would
if
you
they want to?
If they want to, take one if you want to, or...
Well, why don't you take one? Why don't people take it and hold it and look at it? Just take one and experience it that way. Smell it. Mm-hmm. So just take a moment to actually experience this fully and touch, smell, the visual.
Are the seeds what you actually use them?
I don't use the whole
You use
thing.
The whole thing.
You can use the seeds, or sometimes I chop it up.
We actually were looking for the seeds for this. We don't have it, but you can add a whole thing.
Right.
So we said, well, no, we're not taking all the seeds out of that. That's great. That's way too much work. But then we found some recipes to use.
Yeah, but there's flavor in all of it, isn't there?
Yes,
because I've only used it whole.
Oh yeah, it's basically for those of us we've made a sweet potato dish that's been flavored with this.
Yeah.
So this is.
And we also used it to flavor mulled cider.
Mm-hmm. And pears.
And pears.
Pears. So this is star anise.
Yes.
And it's. It's more in Chinese cooking?
I think it's basically
Italian cookies they have.
Italian cookies.
Chinese.
Oh, anise.
It's
Chinese.
Everything in Chinese cooking.
Chinese, yeah.
Soups.
Soup.
Pizzella.
Pizzella. All right. Yeah. I'll pass around a napkin and you can put your objects in there, and that way, so when you get more things, you can
get more. It's interesting. I don't like things sweet, like tasted anise, licorice, but it's like a little bit of it. I don't mind.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
funny. It's and I wonder if it's the sort
anise?
Of flaky.
Like
one of those very different things. Similar to it. Perfect. Or if you're crunching it, it's one. Wasn't an accident. And I also sort of made myself, I could see what they were. I was like, oh, I hate. And I'm like, you know what? What if you just smelled and tasted it? See what it's like to just taste a little bit.
It's different.
This one is more common.
And you'll know what it is.
You'll know immediately what it is.
This is one of my favorite things in the world.
And fennel has a similar,
similar
to this, but not the same plant.
The same.
Very different. Looks like chocolate shavings. I hate to be disappointed. Hired the police to come. Wow. What's interesting about cinnamon is when it's ground, it seems much more potent to me. Mm-hmm. But as the bark itself, I mean, there's flavor there, but it's not as strong.
It takes a long time.
But when you put it in liquid, it comes out.
Mm-hmm. It will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I just ate one of these seeds out of here. Mm-hmm. It was fine. It must be when it cooks into stuff.
I think
the anise has a little bit of
an
aesthetic.
Oh,
so you think I'm not noticing?
Anesthetic,
yeah. Oh, the seed is delicious.
It's not strong tasting.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not strong, but it's.
I never tasted it.
Fairly, I don't think it has a distinctive flavor.
It does.
Uh-huh.
I never knew there were seeds in these because I never looked at it before. I've used them. But. Okay. Okay, here's the whammy.
Here's the whammy. this is glaringly obvious.
Oh, another one of my answers.
Oh, you must be Italian.
Oh, my God. How could you not love this?
People are going to be drooling. They're going to be hungry.
They're going to wonder what's going on. For those of you listening to this tape, you'll have to come again.
Yeah, I have to maintain that myself. Garlic is one of the main food groups.
Yes.
They use 3 cloves of garlic and some. Are you kidding me? That all?
I figured it was a good thing we never had kids because they'd never learned to count. Mm. Something called 4 cloves of garlic. Mm. Does that really mean?
Right.
We can make this recipe with a clay cooker. It's called chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. And
oh.
You basically roast the chicken in a clay pot and on bed garlic.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And then at the end of the garlic, you just spread on
the garlic at the end is soft, and you could spread it on a crusty bread.
Those are beautiful. Look at how pretty this is.
I ate garlic for lunch. Yeah, significant amount. I was in the car, and my daughter got a 16-year-old. She said, "What is that smell?" She said, "Is there something with your shoes?" And she could not.
She couldn't.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael.
So, when does experiencing
We have a question here.
When does experiencing phenomena such as listening to ambient sound versus listening to a symphony, tasting something you maybe never tasted before versus cooking a wonderful soup or a meal and having that, there's a difference. Is it there?
You mean if it's new and you're paying attention?
There's your pain, because the when you listen to a symphony, it's not just as ambient sound. It's not to just, you're listening for themes, and or if you're listening to a song and you're listening to words, or, you know, there's
more specific. There's thought.
Right, there's thought. So as soon as you're, and then the same thing with tasting. I made a gazpacho for dinner, and it's full of all these flavors and wonderful things, and that's not the same as just.
Well, you're not analyzing it and thinking about it. Right, it is a different kind of moment. How would you do it?
Yeah, well, first of all, it seems to me that my experience is that the greatest music doesn't wear out. And I had this, and you shared.
Well, whatever you think is the greatest music.
No.
Okay.
Now we're in. Now
people say, "Oh, I like this," and then they get bored with it. And Emily shared this with me, and it was the Beethoven's Emperor Concerto, and the non-conceptual experience lasted 40 minutes. And you experienced that.
The non-conceptual experience.
Yeah, in other words, the actual being in the music. That's a very deeper form of listening than we ordinarily do. Now, I'm saying that some other kind of music doesn't have it, but it's a different thing than, oh, that's a nice tune, I like it, or something like that.
It goes beyond the music.
It does go beyond
the notes.
Isn't that a preference?
I think that there are other cultures that have great music. Not too many of them, 4 or 5 maybe in the world. Yeah.
But you prefer classical music, so you get an experience that goes beyond perhaps that initial composition, and it carries you to another place, whereas someone else might appreciate something else,
well,
a different
Indian
kind
classical
of music.
Music certainly does that also, and it does it by very different structural techniques.
But I guess I'm trying to get back to the experience of just being, versus being in a specific cultural context, or being within a specific subjective aesthetic.
Well, wait a minute. Whatever your experience is, your subjective experience. There's nothing else in the world except that.
But we're talking about nowness. So,
yeah.
So nowness,
let's talk
is
about
also
that.
A subjective experience.
Nowness is.
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's not so subjective experience.
And furthermore,
it goes beyond
it doesn't,
thought.
It doesn't have to be momentary. It one can be in that. In fact, you have to be. If you're going to be a performer, you pretty much have to be that. You can't think about it when you're doing it.
Right. Yeah.
Pianists can't think about the notes being played. It's too many of them, too fast.
It's a different time and space. Mm-hmm. So what we're pointing to here is the experience of nowness. So the sensation, even though just now I tasted one of these little seeds, I was listening to you and I didn't even notice. So I wasn't actually paying attention to the taste of the seed,
mm-hmm.
because I was thinking about what you were saying.
Yeah.
And now in reflection, I realize I missed that experience because I was doing something else. So when people talk about multitasking, they're just not paying attention to anything. They're just doing too many things at once. So that we're talking about nowness, and it's a different experience from analyzing music or appreciating music at the moment, that type of thing.
Or a meal or a certain type of dish.
Well, you could experience that dish in nowness. You could actually eat in nowness.
Okay,
we almost never do.
We almost never do.
Because we sit down and shovel it in. I notice I'm already on the next bite before I finish swallowing the first bite. And when I notice that, it's rather shocking.
So we have this discipline of it, which is practiced in meditation retreats and Zen, and also in Chogyam Trungpa's, the way to set it up, which is called Oryoki, where the meal is so ritually arranged and simple that you experience it in non-thought. You can get off of it and come back, but
you can lose your mindfulness.
It's complete. It's meditation because there is nothing else to do except specifically to be there. And you get into it after you've learned it. That is, just as you get into music, a piece of music after you actually know it, not because it's something you never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the chanting and the handling of your bowls and the unwrapping them and everything else has been learned. And you're just there with that. You're there with the taste.
But it goes very fast.
But it makes food.
It actually goes fast.
Right, but it lasts a meal, which doesn't have to be very long.
Yeah.
And the food is delicious when it's experienced that way.
But if you're with someone else and you're having dinner with someone else and you're engaging in a conversation, it's no longer about tasting
and
bite.
Yeah.
It's a dual situation. It's the same if you're watching TV and you're eating or whatever you're doing.
Right.
It's not just being with the food.
Yeah.
If you care about the restaurant food, you might find that you're doing both, and it's at least that some of the time you're being very mindful of the taste.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right about gazpacho, but it's just having this wonderful blend and separate flavors at the same time. Sorry, that's just one of summer's wonderful.
It is. It is.
I know. We'll
have to compare yours to mine.
I actually got a locally made vinegar, like an apple cider vinegar. Here's that.
Oh, this will be good with my garlic now.
Did you eat your garlic?
She ate it.
Oh,
not all of it, but I did eat some.
Yeah, really, all of it. That's pretty serious.
It was spicy, so I couldn't eat it.
Are you supposed to eat this?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Appreciate
you're supposed
appreciate
to notice
it. And actually look at it. Look at it and smell it and taste it and feel it, touch it. It has seeds on the outside, so it's... And it may be kind of soft at some places or hard or...
I got to tell you, the garlic and the strawberry actually work. Garlic first.
I'm sure.
A new taste sensation.
I'll have to try that. I know that freshly ground pepper and strawberry is delicious.
One of the neat things about strawberries is that those little things are seeds.
Yes.
I didn't know that until just a few years ago.
And you can
seeds are on the outside.
And you can see the little thread of connection into the center.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they
yeah.
would start growing, and
yeah.
they'd be nourished
that's
by
right.
the inside of the fruit.
I don't think I've ever tasted the seeds as much as that.
Sweet and tart, and yeah, the seeds are popping when you chew them. You can hear them too. You can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
you.
Raspberries
too.
Yes.
Yeah, raspberry.
That middle is pretty.
there's not as much flavor in the center, is there?
There is garlic ice cream, isn't there?
No. Oh, yes. Nice.
There is?
There is.
In California.
That's where I'm from.
Yes. California. It sounds like they're putting garlic or bacon in almost everything these days.
Isn't there a county that grows a lot of garlic?
Gilroy.
Yes, they have a festival.
They have a festival.
Yeah.
And I happened to pass through it once, and we stopped for ice cream, and there was garlic ice cream.
Did you ate the garlic?
No.
Oh,
no,
she just
noted.
I'm always curious.
She noted. Now, I love garlic. In fact, you know, many times I would cut onions and garlic before I decide what I'm going to cook because I know I'm going to use it.
Right. Onions are one of those things that you cook it, it gets better and better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Softer and richer flavor.
The downside is we have all these recipes that say saute onions for 10 minutes or 5 minutes. And it's, well, it tastes better if you do it for an hour.
Right. It could take a long time.
I can get involved.
But
the garlic has to go in the microwave and onions go
first.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I read the recipe and go, no.
Maybe the onions first.
Add flavor, things like cilantro, you don't want to cook for a period of time because the heat sort of kills it.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you make a dish and it's done, and then you put in the cilantro after you turn the thing off.
Okay.
So anyway, that's my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I've seen that.
No, that's what I did with
the
sure.
You did that. That was delicious.
Stems, if you cook them,
they were all good.
The stems
are very good.
Hmm.
And they're good when you cook them. Of course, they have slightly different composition.
So they'll hold up to cooking better than the leaves.
I mean, they taste different.
Okay. I'll bring in cilantro next time. Though my cilantro was so dirty, it would take a long time to wash. But, okay, we'll do one more.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do this one?
Sure.
Whoa. It's strong. It's very strong for a tiny little thing.
Is it for numbing?
Yeah.
For children's, like when they have
symptoms
or whatever.
Oh,
right.
Gee, I'm going to use pericorphic.
If you actually just take the edge and sort of like on your lip, you can feel it.
Does it, the little ball part on the
top? No, the stem.
The stem? It has a numbing property?
The ball part, too.
Chewing gum.
My grandmother used to have an orange stuffed with cloves. That was the something.
We
from
made those.
You did?
Make your mother
presents.
Cloves all orange with a ribbon.
Oh yes, yes. So hang it up.
Yeah. Hot cider. We'll throw a clementine with a bunch of cloves.
You know, all of these sensual things remind me, there's a Havdalah, Jewish service at the end of Sabbath, the Havdalah service, and you have a spice box that you pass around and you smell, and you have a candle, the braided candle with six wicks. And during the service, you also, so there's the light, and you have the service that's dark. So you're singing, and you're seeing, and you're smelling. And you have wine, And then you, at the end of this, it's the end of Sabbath, you take the candle, you put it in the wine, and you listen to it.
The sound of...
It's a beautiful service that's every Saturday evening. And this kind of reminds me of sensory, that the sensory overload of the ritual of the Havdalah service. It's nice.
Thank you.
I've only seen that one once.
Really?
It does. It does. I didn't ever know that. It's numbing.
I don't know. I want my teeth
extracted. It's interesting how long the spices are in memory.
Yes.
Yes.
If they get anonymous, I mean, I guess your memory is in the price.
Yeah.
There's also advice they say for people who are job hunting is to not wear a perfume or an aftershave because you don't know if that memory, that scent memory, will trigger something for your interviewer. You don't necessarily
want
triggered.
Interesting. Why?
Because those are, I think they said that scent memory is our most primal.
Yeah, right.
Because again, it's that, you know, the usefulness is the bad smell is, I could tell you. Smells were primed to hate the most.
So coconut could kill me?
If it drops on your head. So I think we'll conclude with that. So hopefully there's something to think about and take away. But I think the main point here is about the being in nowness and opening to our world fully. Whatever comes, that there's a sense of being able to be open to it, and also notice when we're judging and pushing, shutting down and pushing away things. So I think there's a lot to keep noticing, especially I think with eating. Just they always say if you can slow down and pay attention more, you can actually be more present when you're eating and enjoy your food. Take that to heart myself. Okay, so let's bow. Oh, we have to say our close this off.